we are holding on your Dawud Omar Aleph, 10 lines from the top. Line begins, Shabir Shalayim. Started talking yesterday about dinim involving writing Sifrei Torah, or more generally, writing Kitzvei HaKodesh. More rules on the subject. Turn it up on
You should not make a Sefer Torah with the length, meaning the height of it, being more than the circumference, or the circumference more than the height. It should be proportional, in other words, that the height of the Sefer Torah and the circumference of it should be equal.
Rishonim discussed the question, we'll see in a second, the Gemara will give us figures.
Height has to be proportional to the thickness?
Not to the thickness, but to the circumference. If you were to take, so the Rambam gives a long, elaborate calculation how to make this happen. The gist of it is that you have to figure out how much parchment you're going to be using for the Sefer Torah, figure out the size of the writing you're going to need, and therefore, based on that, how much parchment you're going to need, and then measure it ahead of time so that you, and then make sure that your writing is proportional to the size of the classroom that you're going to use. In other words, if, for example, as the Gemara is going to tell us in a second, for example, if you're writing the Sefer Torah on, you know what, let's learn the next line, and then we'll see. Shalos Rebbe, Shir Sefer Torah Bekama. So they asked Rebbe, okay, what is the proper size of a Sefer Torah to make it Okeh Kekefei? Omalehen, he says to them, Gvil Shisha. If you're writing it on Gvil, which is unsplit parchment, which is therefore very thick, then the amount is Shisha, six Tfachim. If you make the Sefer Torah six Tfachim from top to bottom, and Rashi adds, you write in an average size, you write in an average size lettering, not too small, not too large, then you will come out that your Sefer Torah, when you're done, the total number of sheets wound around together will equal, the circumference of it will equal six Tfachim. Well, yeah, I mean the whole thing, once it's rolled. The outside circumference. The klaf bekama en yedeya. However, when it comes to writing with klaf, which is where you take the parchment and split it into two layers, which is what we do nowadays more or less, then after he says, I don't know what the correct figure should be, because then obviously it's going to be different. Then it's not going to be quite as thick. Mefarshim discussed on this basis. I mean, the Gemara tells us in a few other places that a Sefer Torah is supposed to be written on gvil. Do you see from this Gemara you can write it on klaf? So most Rishonim say yes. You see that you can. It may not be the ideal thing. It might be ideal to write on the grill.
Gvil and cloth.
Gvil is the unsplit skin.
Okay.
Then if you split it into two layers, you have one is called cloth and one is called duxus.
So we write Rishonim. On cloth.
We write on cloth. The Yemenites, the right attacker, hold that based on the idea that Lachshiri is supposed to write on grill, they write on grill.
What's the matter of writing on grill?
Because the Halacha Moshe Mishnah, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, is that a Sefer Torah is supposed to be written on grill, tefillin on klaf, and mezuzah on duxus. That's Halacha Moshe Mishnah, that's how it should be. Lamaita, according to the vast majority of poskim, all of them are kosher if you write them on klaf, and that's how we do it nowadays.
Right.
But anyway.
Even though
the Halacha Moshe Mishnah doesn't mean that you can't write a Sefer Torah on klaf, but I'm on a point, it just means it's preferable, and it means that you can't write it on duxus.
Is the other
layer of the skin.
Which one, the inside?
So that's most poskim hold that klaf is the outer layer and duxus is the inner layer. There's editions of the Rambam that have it the other way around, and it seems that way. It seems like that. The Rambam's Shitta based on his Trovus, etc. That's the other way around. This is the outer layer, Kwas is the inner layer. Anyway.
For today,
no. Yeah. Okay. All right. Anyway, so that's the size that it should be in order that you'll have Oto Kefe, in order to have that the height and the circumference of the Sefer Torah should be equal. By the way, various Mefarshim talk about the Baal Shad wings, and other Rishonim, various Rishonim talk about the idea why six Tfachim. Another reason is because that way it'll be as similar as possible to the Luchas. The Luchas, we're going to learn later on our Amud, were 6 Tfachim by 6 Tfachim, and 3 Tfachim thick. So therefore, you make the Sefer Torah 6 Tfachim tall and 6 around. Granted, I mean, a Sefer Torah is a round cylinder. The Luchas were square, so it can't be perfectly exact, but at least it symbolizes that idea by making it 6 by 6. There is, by the way, also a Machlokas Rishonim. Does this amount include the Atzichayim? The Rambam holds no. If you look at the calculations that Rambam gives, this that we're saying, the circumference of the Sefer Torah, does it include the Atzichayim? Does it include the according to the Rambam, no. On the face of it, because when you have the Sefer Torah rolled up, you have it on the Atzichayim, don't you? On the face of it, maybe those should
like,
be included.
This is the circumference of the Sefer Torah. And then if you split it open, and then you stand it up, that should be the height.
No, in other words, okay, in other words, no. Let's put it this way. Here's your safer Torah, right?
Right.
So one way of looking at it is you're counting only the circumference of the rolled up parchment. This is how when the Rambam gives this calculation, he's basing himself on that. You're strictly looking at the circumference of the rolled up parchment, the outside circumference, no etayim, no nothing, and it has to be equal to, and it's supposed to be equal to the height. It doesn't mean, by the way, if it's not possible. It just means it's not
no,
the ideal way to do it. Many Rishonim say, though, that you do count the Eitz Chaim. However, they say still it has to be, the Eitz Chaim has to be proportional to the size of the Sefer Torah. You can't, for example, make an extra thick Eitz Chaim to compensate and make it that way it'll work out. Okay. So, the Gemara says, Rav Huna cost of Shivin Sifrei Dor Ha'Isa.
It's a normal...
No, well, three times. No, it will be three times the radius about. Yeah, but it means, in other words...
Three times the diameter. Six times the radius.
Yeah, okay, whatever. Yeah, you're right. Okay, fair enough. The point is that, yeah, okay. So, Rav Huna cost of Shivin Sifrei Torah. So Rav Huna wrote 70 Sifrei Torah during his lifetime, and he only managed to come out with Orke Kefe in one of them. Because, in other words, because, again, it's very complicated to get it right.
He had to be perfect.
Yeah.
You know.
On the other hand, Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Kosef Chada, Mashche de Igli. On the other hand, Rav Acha bar Yaakov wrote one single Sefer Torah on calf skin, the Israeli, and it came out, Orker Kerkefe. Yahavu be Rabbanon Einayhu, that Rabbanon gave a look at him, but Noch Nafshe, and he passed away, meaning from an Ayin Hara. Now, what happened? Obviously, many Mephoshim say, doesn't mean they deliberately, they weren't out to get him. They looked at him like with surprise, like he was able to do that, and that caused an Ayin Hara. The Chassam Sofer has an interesting explanation on it. He says, maybe what it was is they figured, how is it possible that Punkt, your first one, you didn't even try, and Punkt came out, Oto Kekefe, like it must have been. It must have been that you used the name of Hashem, it must have been that you used Kabbalah Mises or something like that. And in that case, that's an improper thing to do, to write a Sefer Torah. Therefore, they felt that that it's not the right thing for him to do, and therefore their Kepeda had an effect on him.
Who were the Chachamim?
The other Chachamim of his generation. Omer le Rabbanan le Rav Hamnuna. The Rabbanan one time told Rav Hamnuna, Kosev Rav Ami Dalad Meya Sifrei Torah. You should know that Rav Ami wrote during his lifetime 400 Sifrei Torah. He says that's not possible. A person can't have written, exactly. He says a person cannot possibly have written 400 Sefer Torah in his lifetime. Yeah. No. Maybe he didn't write the entire Torah. Maybe it means he wrote out 400 times the Pasuk Torah Tziva, which is a variety of explanations among the Poroshim. Maybe he wrote it for children to learn because that's the first Pasuk you teach children. Maybe it meant each time there was a Sefer Torah in the process of being written, he would ask the sofer to be able to write the Pasuk Torah Tziva in it, which to a certain extent, writing one letter in a Sefer Torah is considered like writing the whole thing. You're kind of in the midst of writing a Sefer Torah through that, not Rubik Kikola, it's only one Pasuk,
right.
But because without that Pasuk, it would be an incomplete Sefer Torah, it would be possible Sefer Torah. Therefore, even one letter is considered, so in this case, if you wrote one Pasuk, okay. Amalei Rava le Rav Zera, similarly, Rava says to Rav Zera, a similar kind of thing, not to Rav Yanei Abba Meir Kaim. You should know, Rav Yanai, during his lifetime, planted 400 vineyards. And again, Omaleh, so Rav Zeta says, not necessarily 400 vineyards. That would have taken a huge amount of time. When would he have time to learn Torah or do anything else? Duma Shtayim, Kineged Shtayim, Ba'achat Yotze Zonot. Maybe what you mean is he planted the minimum thing that can be considered a vineyard in Halacha, namely, five vines in a configuration that is considered a vineyard in Halacha.
The vines, which is a row of.
No, so in Halacha, in a number of places, for example, as far as the Dinim of Kalayim and for other purposes, we say that the minimum size vineyard is Shtayim Kineged Shtayim V'Achas Yotze Zonov. Two next to two, and one sticking out on the end. The Rambam holds it like this.
Two vines next to two?
Two. According to the Rambam, it's like this. Two in one row, three in the other. According to some other Rishonim, it's like this, with the fifth one in the middle between the two rows.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the point is that's the minimum that can be considered a vineyard in Halacha. Maybe he only planted that in order to cultivate Eretz Yisrael, Mephoshim say, but not. No, but it was a not, that means he did it himself. So therefore, Rav Zeira is saying not necessarily did he plant full vineyards of dozens of vines, just five each. Okay. All right. So thus far, okay. Getting back to the point, we were saying that a Sefer Torah is supposed to be Orker Kekefe, and we're saying that a Sefer Torah written on Gvil should be six tefachim tall and six tefachim in circumference.
why do we compare the making of Sefer Torah to vineyards planting?
No, we're not, because since we mentioned that, since we mentioned this, that 400, Rabami's 400 Sefer Torah, so we mentioned the 400 vineyards as well. No, it's not that specifically a vineyard, no. But some of course should say, why would he have done that? In order to cultivate out Israel, you should vote Israel. But mentioning it as a side thing, it's not getting back to our main topic of Sefer Torah, which is, okay, so again, to review, we said a Sefer Torah is supposed to be 6 tefachim tall, it's written on Gvil, and 6 tefachim in circumference. So now, basically, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction to this figure that you're saying how large a Sefer Torah should be. Let's look at the Braisa is going to describe how the Oron, which had the Luchos in it, what was the size of it and how the space in its inside it was used. Oron Shasa Moshe, the Oron that Moshe made, Amasayim v'chetzi oker v'amah v'chetzi rochva v'amah v'chetzi kemosi. The pasuk says it's 2.5 by 1.5 by 1.5 amos, 2.5 long, 1.5 wide, 1.5 tall. Now, what is an amah? V'amah bas shisha tefachim. So the Tana Tekama of our Braiser, which is Reb Meir, will say at the end, holds that the amah for this purpose consists of 6 tefachim. There's a general machloikus in a number of places in Shas between Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda. We know for sure that the amos that we used for the structure of the Mishkan and the Beis Mikdash consisted of 6 tefachim each. There's a machlokas, what about the amos that was used for the kelim? Reb Meir holds also 6. Reb Yehuda holds 5.
Why would they use different
amos? Because they have different size amos for different purposes. There's a pasuk in Yechezkel that mentions the amos of the Mizbeach. It says amos v'tefach, that an amos consists of an amos plus a tefach. So that implies that there's 2 kinds of amos, 5 and a 6. So Reb Yehuda holds this one for one kind of thing and the other for the other kind of thing, or Meir holds that. So starting with the coin to the Meir, if we say then, so if we say that an amah consists of 6 tefachim, then it means that the Oron was 15 tefachim long by 9 wide by 9 tall. So let's work out how the space was used in it. The luchos were each 6 tefachim long, 6 tefachim wide, and 3 tefachim thick. Munachos keneged oker shel oren, and they were placed in the oren along the length of the oren. In other words, they were placed, according to our Gemara over here, they were placed face up in the oren. They were placed face up so that each one, you have 6 and 6. So therefore, in other words, the two of them next to each other take up 12 tefachim.
Face up.
In other words, if you opened
they were
up,
lined
you,
up?
They were lying on their back.
They were lying on their back.
Yeah, there's a diagram there in the art school, Gemara. They were lying on their backs. If you took off the cover off the Aron and looked, you would see the Dibros looking up at you. Yeah. There are Rishonim who explain based on Yerushalmis, based on other sources that maybe Tosfos actually mentions it briefly in Menachos, that maybe there's a different possibility. The Luchos were maybe 6 by 3 each, and therefore what it is they would put the two of them next to each other, and then they put the broken Luchos next to them. And we'll talk about the broken luchos later. Our Gemara is not like that. Our Gemara is going to say later that the broken luchos were underneath the whole luchos. Anyway.
No one says that they were tablets.
No one says that they were round on top, indeed. And then we all know that Rebbe Sturm about that beginning in the early 1980s, that it's wrong to do that. It's copied from the Goyim, and we can see from our Gemara clearly that it's no such thing, and therefore you shouldn't do that. And that's why in Lubavitcher publications and on our Ernest Kodesh and whatever, we don't have them with rounded tops, right? Okay. So, Tama luchos ochlus barin. How much space then do the luchos take up in the oren? Shnei mosa tefachim. If each one is 6 tefachim wide, then together they take up 12 tefachim. That's 12 out of 15. Nishtayru sham shloisha tefachim. So far you have left of the width of the width. Yeah, well, no, we're not talking the width yet. We're not talking the length yet. We're not talking the height of the luchos. We're talking about the width of them. Here's one luach. Here's the other.
Okay.
They're lying next to each other. So far this is 12 tefachim. We have 3 tefachim remaining of the length of the Aron, because according to the Meir, the Aron is 15 tefachim long. Yeah.
Each
luach is 6 by 6, we said, yeah. Same ahem tefach, so out of that 3 tefachim, subtract 1 tefach, chetzi l'koytel zeh v'chetzi l'koytel zeh, 1/2 tefach for each of the walls of the Aron. The Aron was a wooden box. With a wooden box with a gold box in it and a gold box outside of it. One tefach here. Half a tefach here, half a tefach here. So far we have 13 tefachim accounted for.
Okay.
12 that are taken up by the luchos, and 1 tefach together that's taken up by the walls of the Aron on the two sides. Nishtayru sham shnei tefachim. Now we have left 2 tefachim. What do we do with those 2 tefachim? Shebehen sefer Torah munach. The sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote is placed into that 2 tefachim. And it's
how can you write the, put a Sefer Torah into Tefachim?
That's what we have to figure out. That's why we're bringing this bride in. That's why we're bringing this bride in. But wait, if we said
before, Tefachim is,
if we said before that the proper size of a Sefer Torah is six Tefachim tall,
right,
by six Tefachim in circumference,
Tefachim,
six Tefachim in circumference means two in diameter, right?
Right.
Well then,
six in
circumference, means approximately two in diameter. But that's what we're going to figure out later.
Well, it's only wrapped once, not wrapped like
that. That's what we have to figure out. That's the Gemara is going to talk about
well,
that on the day.
No, we're not there yet.
Right, but for the moment,
for the moment,
just take it as written that there were two Tefachim and they put a Sefer Torah in there. That's the reason the Gemara is bringing this in, is because we're going to ask how that works out. But wait. Why is there a Sefer Torah in there? Shenema, and it was placed, by the way, next to the Luchos. So in other words, you have Luach 1, Luach 2, Sefer Torah.
Why on the left, why not on the right?
It was placed because,
it's the front or the back.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be on one side or the other.
Yeah, so
I guess one logical reason is you're reading them in order. You read the Aseret HaDibros, and then from there you go to the Torah, which is the rest of the Torah that the Eved gave Moshe Rabbeinu. I don't know. That's the way everybody draws it. I suppose conceivably it could have been on this side. I don't know. Anyway, you have two Tefachim left. There, a Sefer Torah is placed. How do we know there's a Sefer Torah in there? This is one of the Sefer Torah that Moshe wrote at the end of his life. He wrote 13 Sefer Torah. Rashi says on the pasuk here in Parshas Vayelech, he gave 12, one to each of the Shvatim, and the 13th was for Shevet Levi, and it was kept in the Arim. Shenema. As the pasuk says,
why so the Shevet Levi have to write two?
No, so they had one. The one. I don't know. What do you mean?
12.
No, one for each of the Shvatim and one for counting Menashe and Ephraim separately, and one for Levi.
That wrote on all the stones.
That's something else. That's Yeshua did that. That's Yeshua did that after the came to Eretz Yisrael. How do we know there's a Sefer Torah in the Oren Shenema? Because the pasuk says Ein va'Oren rak shnei lochos ha'avonim. Because the pasuk says that when they brought it in to the first place in the fish, there wasn't anything in the Oren, only the two lochos ha'avonim asher hiniach sham Moshe, which Moshe placed there. Now my Ein va'Oren rak. What does it mean when it says there's nothing in the Oren? Only that's miut acha miut. It's a miut. After a miut, because the word ach and the word rak both come to be my something. They both come to exclude something. The ein miut, ach miut, elo l'rabbis. When you have a miut, ach miut over there, we have a general concept, and in many places of chaff, that it actually comes to include something. So therefore,
well,
okay.
Include something.
So
the Jews are argumentative.
Well, there's that. But I might talk about a couple of possibilities. One of them is that maybe
so
the second...
Mute and mute,
because one possibility that I might talk about a few possibilities, one of them, he says, is maybe the second mute comes to modify the first mute. The first mute would tell us there's nothing else in there.
Negative.
The second one, like a double negative. The second one tells us, but within that nothing else, there is something. There is one other thing.
There's two ruts.
Yeah, ein ba'ar and rak. Elul Rabbah Sefer Torah Shemunah Baran. And therefore, that comes to include the Sefer Torah, which was placed in the Aron next to the Luchos. Fine. Kernas the Aron the Okay. Fine. So far, we've taken care of how the length of the Aron was used up. Again, out of 15 Tefachim length, 12 for the Luchos, 2 for the Sefer Torah, and 1 for the walls. So the entire length of the Aron is filled up. Say your Pounus Aron the Rabbah. Now go and figure out how the width of the Aron was used. Again, according to the mayor, the width of the Aron is 9 Tefachim. Kama Luchos Oklos V'Aron, 6 Tefachim. How much do the Luchos take up? 6 Tefachim, because again, the height of each Luach was 6 Tefachim. So you're placing one with a tight like this, the other with a tight like this, along the width of the Aron. Then you have 6 Tefachim taken up. Nishayrisham Shlosh Tefachim, that leaves 3 Tefachim. Again, the walls of the Aron on the two sides, the front and back walls of the Aron, were a half a tefach thick each. So far we've accounted for 7 tefachim. Nishtayr shem shnei tefachim, that leaves over 2 tefachim. Why do we have those 2 tefachim? Shelo yehi sefer Torah nichnas v'yotik shu dochel. Because we do not want the sefer Torah to be crowded for space when we take it in, when we take it out and put it in. Meaning, occasionally that sefer Torah. Now, Rashi learns on other days the sefer Torah that we're talking about over here, which was in the Oren, was occasionally taken out to lane from. Rashi says the Kohen Gadol would use it to lane from on Yom Kippur. The king would use it to lane from by Hakel. Tosfos says that not. Tosfos says the Sefer Torah was never actually used to lane from. However, they still have to take it out occasionally just to air it out to prevent it from rotting away. So whatever it is, occasionally it has to be taken out. Therefore, you need to have room along the side. You need to have one tefach along the sides of the Aron. You have, again, the Luchos over here. You have space over here and space over here and the Sefer Torah over here. The purpose of that space, as viewed from above, exactly. The purpose of that space is that when it comes time to take out the Sefer Torah, you're going to be able to reach in. You can put one hand in over here, one hand in over here, and lift out the Sefer Torah. Otherwise, you wouldn't have room to.
So you used to open the aorin from...
So you would open the aorin from the top, you'd take off the capotis, and then you'd take out the Sefer Torah. Tosis points out, I mean, occasionally they'd have to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim to do repairs. We know usually the only one who goes in there is the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. But occasionally you have to have workmen go in there for repairs. By the same token, every so often, you'd have to have people go in there to take out the Sefer Torah and air it out and prevent it from rotting.
How could it rot if it's in such a holy place?
You can't in some kind of net. You can't rely on it. In some kind of net. So you can't.
Good for tzaddikim doesn't.
Very nice. Okay, but as far as you still don't want to rely on that. You still want to make sure that it doesn't get moldy or whatever. Also, Tosfos says another possibility. How about during the years from when Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed until the Beis Hamikdash was built, until the Aron was brought in there? During that time, the Aron was not in the Mishkan; it was in a separate place. The Aron was in Yerushalayim, first in Kiryas Arim, then in Yerushalayim. The rest of the Mishkan was in Nov, then in Gibeon. So then they would be able to take it out of the Aron and actually learn from it. So
that's Kedusha.
Yeah.
They could learn from it.
Apparently, that's to look in it.
Well, they could also look at the little place when they turn it out, when they take it out.
That's true. Okay. Onward. Divrei Rav Meir. This is all according to Rav Meir. Rabbi Yehuda, remember, Ba'ama Bas Chamisha Tfachim. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, the Aron, like all the other Kalim, was measured with an Amma of 5 Tfachim. Therefore, let's redo the calculations. According to him, in other words, it comes out the Aron was 12.5 by 7.5 by 7.5 tefachim. So, but he agrees on the size of the luchos. The haluchos oken shisha v'rochon shisha v'avyan shleisha. The luchos again are 6 long, 6 wide, and 3 and 3 thick. Munachos ba'oka shalon, and again he agrees they're placed along the length of the Aron, face up. Therefore, according to him, kama luchos oklus v'aron, according to him, how much space do the luchos take up in the aron? Shneimos atrochim, 12 trochim. Nishtar shem chatsi tefach. All you have left, according to him, is a half a tefach, because according to him, the length of the aron is 12.5 trochim. Esbalakotel zeva. So according to him, the walls of the aron were thinner. Each one was only 1 esba. Now, Rashi brings over here, there's actually two different girsais. Tosfos also discusses over here. There was a girsa espo mechta, 1.5 esbais. Rashi explains, when we talk about an espa in halakha, we usually mean a thumb width, of which 4 of them make a tefach. But sometimes instead you can be talking, four thumb width.
Like this?
Yes.
Three.
But some posts can say you do like this with the thickness of the thumb. Okay, whatever. The point is that So four thumbs make a tefach. On the other hand, 6 pinkies make 1 tefach. Therefore, if we have the gears over here, espo mechta, then it would mean using pinky. If it's espo, like the way we have it in our Gemara is printed, then it means one. Then it means 4 thumbs or 6 pinkies. Either way, the point is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the walls were each 1/4 of a tefach thick, half the thickness that Rav Meir made them. Rav Meir made them half a tefach. Rav Yehuda is making them 1/4 of a tefach, 1 thumb width.
One thumb width.
Fine. And that means there's no room for the Sefer Torah. We'll see soon what Rabbi Yehuda says they did with the Sefer Torah. Rabbi Yehuda says, fine, you've worked out what the length of the Aron was used for. Say your parents Aron Larochle, let's go figure out the width. Kamaluchos Ogdus Baron Shishat Tvachim, how much do they take up 6 Tvachim out of the 7.5? Nishtayasham Tepachom Nechse, you have a Tepach and a half left. Say Mehen Chatsi Tepach, you subtract from that a half a Tepach, again, Esbo Mechsel Lakozel Zeb, 1.5 pinkies or 1 thumb. Per each wall, same idea as on the other side. So far we've accounted for 7 tefachim. So far we've accounted, sorry, 6.5 tefachim. 6 for the luchos, a half for the 2 walls combined. Nishtar sham tefach, you have left 1 tefach. Shaboy amudin oimdim. In that tefach, you have poles standing in there. What are these poles? Rashi says they're silver poles, like the poles of a Sefer Torah, like the Afichaim of a Sefer Torah. They're lying lengthwise, Rashi says, and the luchos are between them. In other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have the luchos here in the Aron, 1, 2, 6.
You have the luchos here,
and then you have a stick lying along one length over here, and a stick lying along one length over here. According to him, the Sefer Torah wasn't in the Aron. Wait, we'll get to that too. What's the purpose of these sticks? Tosfos says the reason is it would symbolize that the Jewish people should stand upright and firm. They didn't want to make them out of gold because that would be... They're lying down, okay, but still, they're sticks. They represent strength and whatever. They didn't want to make them of gold, Tosva says, because ein kategor nasa sanegor, gold would remind the evishter of the chet egel, therefore they made them out of silver. There's various other explanations what these sticks were used for. The Ravid wants to say that the Sefer Torah, they would use them as the Asei Chaim for the Sefer Torah. When they took it out to lay from them, he holds like Rashi that it was used to lay by the Kohen Gadol and by the king and whatever. It needed Asei Chaim. They didn't keep
so what did they do? They took
so they would take, they according to him, in other words, they would take out the Sefer Torah, they'd take out the parchment, they'd roll one end of it onto one stick and the other end onto the other stick, and they'd use that to lay. And then there's a third possible reason.
They have to take them in and out. Why not leave them all the time in?
Because they didn't necessarily. They didn't have to leave the sticks in there all the time. They left them in the orange. The ritual gives yet another explanation. He says maybe what it is they used these sticks. They did have them standing vertically. They had what they would do is they'd have the kaporis balanced on those sticks so that the kaporis is not directly on top of the orange. It's a little bit elevated off it. So in other words, if, let's say, according to the Rehoda, the Aron is 7.5 tefachim tall, so maybe these sticks were like 8 tefachim tall, so they would hold up the Aron, they would hold up the Kaporis a little bit above the Aron.
Well, we have a minhag putting silver sticks in our Sefer Torah.
Where do we put silver sticks in our Sefer Torah? The Sardim have the Rimonim, the pomegranate-shaped decoration. No, we don't have them on our Sefer Torah. We have silver crowns instead. Okay. Where do we see that there were these sticks? Shenema, the pasuk says that Purian Osalei Hamelach Shlomo Ma'at Elavon. And the pasuk in Shiashirim says that Shlomo Hamelach, and throughout Shiashirim, Shlomo Hamelach refers to the Eveshter, made himself in a Purian, like a beautiful room or a beautiful conveyance or whatever, like to carry him out of the wood of Levonin, which represents the Purian represents the Beit Mikdash, the Mishkan in general, and the Oren specifically. Amudav Osa Kesef, its pillars, its sticks, he made out of silver. Rufi Dose Zahav, the seat of it is made out of gold, representing representing the Kaporis, which is the seat of the Shina. The Shina sits between Kaviyakol, between the two Kruvim on the Kaporis. Merkavei Agamon Regomer, the place for riding of it was made out of purple wool, etc. So we see that there's an idea of silver sticks involved with it. And that's he's saying these silver sticks were inside the Aron. Next, Rabbi Yehuda says, "Va'argaz sheshigru by plishtim dorin lelekei Yisrael." Next, there was a box that the plishtim sent as a gift to the Eveshter. After we find in Sefer Shmuel that there was a period when the Aron was captured, when Mishkan Shilu was destroyed, and the Aron was captured by the plishtim, they started having all kinds of terrible diseases, and their idols are being destroyed, and they're being overrun with mice and hemorrhoids and all kinds of for the plishtim. So eventually they realized that we gotta get rid of the Aron. It's in Sefer Shmuel. It's in Shmuel.
No, we said it tomorrow.
We may have. I don't remember. Anyway. So they wound up sending back the Aron, as well as they sent along a box of golden images of mice and of swellings, which were the things that they were suffering from, to show that they recognized that Hashem brought this on them. So this box remained next to the Aron. It was placed in the Kodesh HaKadoshim next to the Aron. Munach Mitzidah. It was placed next to the Aron. Shenema.
Things that belong to Goyim.
Because they gave it as a present to Hashem, so therefore it belongs next to the Aron. Maybe there's the idea, you know, when you get down to it.
So weird.
But when you get down to it, this is actually the first time ever in history that a nation of Goyim recognized Hashem's power and sent him a gift. You know, you have in our parashiyos, but, you know, Paray finally gave in and let the Yidden go, and then a week later he's chasing after them. Yisro became a gift. But I'm talking about that you should have an entire nation like this, the entire nation of Plishtim, recognize Hashem has struck us. We've got to give him a gift to appease him. This is the first time that ever happened. Maybe that's why
I can get a gift, but why put it in the Aron?
Yeah, well, that's not in the Aron, next year. Tanema, as the Pasuk says, when they sent back the Aron, the golden images that you sent, that you're giving Hashem as a gift, as a guilt offering, place them in a box next to it, and you should send it off and it'll go. And so then afterwards, that box was kept together with the Aron.
Even there were images, and we're not supposed to...
They're images of mice and of swelling, but they're not images that are also to make in Halacha. But all of Sefer Torah Munach. And then on top of that box was where they placed the Sefer Torah, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Since there wasn't room for it in the Aron, they placed it in the box. On top of the box, rather. Where did they put it before the box? That's what Gemara is going to talk about on Amud Beis. In other words, you have here's the Aron, here's the box, and the Sefer Torah lay there on top of the box. Shenema, L'koyach ha-Sefer HaTorah Azeh, as the Pasuk says, the Eveshter tells Moshe, take this Sefer Torah, v'samtem oisim mitzad Aron b'ris Hashem, and place it on the side of the Aron. implying mitzad hu munach v'lo b'socha, implying, Rabbi Yehuda says, the implication of the word mitzad is that it's next to the aron, not in it, like Rabbi Meir says. Whereas we're going to learn on Amud Beis, Rabbi Meir would say that no, mitzad can mean on the side, meaning on the side of the luchos, but still within the aron. There's a sicha in Chelek Tes where the Rebbe analyzes the deeper idea behind this Rashi, because Rashi brings it on the pasuk over there, so it's a Rashi sicha. The Rebbe explains, among other things, the deeper idea behind it, that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing like this. The luchos, the aseret adibros, are the direct communication of the Eibishter speaking to the Jewish people at Har Sinai. They heard the first two dibros directly from Hashem, the rest we heard through Moshe, but still, then you have, it sort of, it has to be translated down into our terms, that's the rest of the Torah. Is the Eibishter translating down those general concepts, the aseret adibros, into the rest of the Torah? You can ask, when a Rebbe has a concept that has to be conveyed to a Talmud, so fine, he has to bring it down to the Talmud level. Does it have to be that the ideas and the concepts that he uses have to be within the original idea? That would be like Rav Meir, that you have to have the Sefer Torah within the Aron. Or can it be, as long as it's connected to it, the Gemara is going to say, Amud Beis, originally there was a shelf sticking out of the Aron, it can be outside it, but still connected to it. That's Rabbi Yehuda's position.
Both of them.
Right. But each one is valid. That's where the Rebbe explains over there. That's where Rashi uses the expression over there in Rashi, in Parshas Vayelech, on this passage. Rashi uses the expression, because there's two different ideas among the Chachamim themselves of what's the proper way to teach Chachma to a Talmud. Umani Mekayim Ein Ba'or in Rak. So Rabbi Yehuda says, fine, what am I doing with the Miyot HaMiyot that we said before, Ein Ba'or in Rak, which Rabbi Meir said to you, teaches us that the Sefer Torah was in the Aron. He says, L'rabit Shivrei Luchos Shemunachem Ba'orin. No, that doesn't come to teach us the Sefer Torah. That comes to teach us that the broken Luchos were also in the Aron, underneath the whole Luchos.
Like you said before.
Okay, so thus far the Braisa. Now, why are we bringing this in again? Because we mentioned before the proper size of a Sefer Torah. Let's see if we can make that work with this Braisa. The Isak Udaivach Sefer Torah HaKefer Vav Tvachim. Now, let's consider. If you're going to say that the proper size of a Sefer Torah is the circumference should be 6 Tvachim. Messy. Well, let's consider. We know a general mathematical rule. Kol sheyeshbe kefer shlosh tefachim yeshbe reichav tefach. Anything that has a diameter of 1 tefach is going to. Anything that has a circumference of 3 tefachim has a diameter of 1 tefach. In this case, in other words, 6 tefachim diameter translates 6 tefachim circumference translates to 2 tefachim diameter. The kiven dilem to is in niglal. Now, if we assume that this
one tefach of diameter,
no, 1 tefach of radius, diameter is the entire from end to end.
Right.
If this is the cross section of the Sefer Torah, if this is the Sefer Torah, in other words, around it is 6, across it from one end to the other of the circle is 2.
Okay.
Fine. But kiven de la emtzeis in niglal, the problem is, though, the Sefer Torah presumably was rolled to the middle, as Sefer Torah usually are. It wasn't necessarily rolled to one end or the other. Nafesh le mitzrei tivcha, rabcha de beni beni. In that case, then it's even more than 2 tefachim because you have to consider the space between the two amodim. If you have a Sefer Torah rolled up, it's two columns like this. You have the you have the diameter of each of the columns, plus you have the extra space over here.
So it's more.
The trei pushki hecha yosid. How are you going to make it fit in 2 tefachim?
Two columns.
So the Rashba talks about the idea. The Rashba talks about the idea. We can't assume that the Sefer Torah was placed in there on its side like this, because that would be a bazillion to the Sefer Torah to place it like this. It has to have been like this. He says also there's another reason also. If you placed it like this, it would be too narrow. Again, according to the mayor, that you have 2 tefachim space over there. If you had it like this, and therefore the total width of it is only a little over 1 tefach, when you move the aron, it would fall over. It wouldn't be. He says, for the same reason that Ashba said, you shouldn't put it standing up either. It'll fall over. Anyway, that Ashba wants to say, maybe it's not really respectful to store Sefer Torah standing up anyway, although practically speaking, he says, we always see Sefer Torah are placed in the Aron standing up. Okay, I'm a Dvar, that's how it is. But in the Aron, they didn't want to do that. They wanted to have it laying down. So then back to our
more respectful to stand it than to lie.
Tosfos actually talks about it in Menachos as well. It gets into the question of how a mezuzah should be placed, whether it's vertical or horizontal. Tosfos over there proves from our Gemara that, just like we see the Sefer Torah was supposed to be laying down, so also a mezuzah should be laying down. Okay, anyway, we'll learn more about that in Menachos. The point is, in order to compromise between Rashi and then Rebbe Tam. So if it's like this, how does it fit in 2 tefachim?
It's not a compromise.
It is, because it actually says it should be vertical.
So either way.
Okay, that's the compromise. So if the Sefer Torah is like this, how are you going to fit it in 2 tefachim? Doesn't that show that a Sefer Torah should be smaller than that?
Right.
Now, obviously, the Gemara is assuming that Moshe's Sefer Torah was written on Gvil, because again, we said before, that is the best way to write it. And besides, we did mention the Gvil Shish HaTfachim. Evidently, that is the full thickness, but evidently, six Tfachim is the proper size for a Sefer Torah. Our Sefer Torah are a lot larger than that, usually, but okay. So Rav Acha bar Yaakov answers, the answer is the Sefer Torah of the Azara, this Sefer Torah that we're talking about that was in the Aron, which again, Rashi says they took it out occasionally to lane from it, it was not rolled like a regular Sefer Torah to wherever they last lane from it, rather it was rolled to the beginning.
Okay.
So it was rolled to the beginning, right. Now you're not talking about two cylinders of a space between them. Now it's one big cylinder.
Right.
So therefore, fine, six Tvachim tall, two Tvachim across. That works.
They used to roll it back every time to the beginning?
Yeah, because again, according to Rashi, they only leaned from it once or twice a year. According to Tosfos, they never even leaned from it. Yeah. And Rashi adds also, that means it had only one Eitz Chaim. Actually, Rashi learns over here it means that it was rolled to the end. Tosfos discussed before that maybe it should have been better rolled to the beginning. But whatever, the point is, it was rolled to one end or the other, so therefore it's one big cylinder rather than two. Question is, Vakati Tre Betre Hech Yosef. Fine, but still, how are you going to take... What? Yeah, that's what Rashi learns, that it was rolled from... In other words, it was rolled to Vezot HaBracha. Tosfos discussed before that, no, it should have been rolled to Bereshit. Okay, Vakati Tre Betre Hech Yosef. Fine, you still have to ask, how are two Tvachim going to fit in exactly two Tvachim? If you have exactly two Tvachim of space over there, and the Sefer Torah is exactly two Tvachim circumference, you still, how is it going to fit? Now, Tosfos asks the question in Eruvin. We know mathematically the rule that we said 3 to 1 is not exact. Pi is larger than 3. It's 3 1/7 about.
Right.
So a Sefer Torah that has a diameter of six Tvachim, a circumference of six Tvachim, is going to be a little less than two Tvachim, of course.
Minimal.
But still, it's a difference. Tosfos leaves it over there with a question. Right, so some Mephoshim answer that, yeah, because it's so minimal, it's not really going to make much of a difference as far as being able to get the Sefer Torah in and out. The other possibility, again, we were discussing before whether the six Tvachim circumference includes the Eitz Chaim or not.
Yeah.
If we take the view that the Sefer Torah had an Eitz Chaim, that increases the diameter. So you're back to the question.
Back to the question.
Yeah.
So they took the Eitz Chaim out when they put it in?
Well, no, we're assuming they put it in with it. So Rav Ashi says, yes, but what they did is like this. Basically, they rolled it to Vezot HaBracha, according to Rashi, or Bereshit, according to Tosfos. But not, Purta is a little, but not all the way. They rolled it, let's say, for example, instead of rolling it to Vezot HaBracha, according to Rashi, they rolled it, let's say, to Hazim. And then they put the last little bit of it rolled up on top of it. In other words, they did basically have it like this. They did basically, most of the large cylinder. It's not so much because it's basically rolled up into one thing, and then you have a little roll of a couple of things like this. So therefore, it's not going to fall. It's not going to be a design. It's not going to fall.
It goes like this,
it goes like this. Essentially, it goes like this. Here's the larger part of it from Bereshit until, let's say, Hazinu, and then you have the rest. The Zagrafa is rolled up over here. According to Tosfos, it would be the other way around. Instead of being rolled to Parshas Bereshit, it would be rolled to Parshas Noach. Same idea. What?
According to
Tosfos. Yeah.
The small part will be on the bottom.
Yes. No. According to Tosfos, you would still have. No, it would be instead of being like it would be like this. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
On the left. On the other side.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fine. Now that we've taken care of that issue with the size of the Sefer Torah and how it would fit in the space, let's deal with some other things left over from this Braisa. Rabbi Yehuda, Mikamid Delei Se'agad, let's ask, according to Rabbi Yehuda, in this few hundred years between when the Aron was made, or when Moshe wrote the Sefer Torah, and when the Plishtim sent their presents with the golden mice and whatever, all that time, Sefer Torah, Hecha Yosef, where'd they put the Sefer Torah all that time? The answer is, Dapa Hava Nochuk Mineh, because Rabbi Yehuda would say there was a shelf sticking out of the Aron, the Yosef Ilavei Sefer Torah, and the Sefer Torah was placed on top of that. So eventually, once there was a shelf. Then eventually, when the Plishtim sent their box, then instead they put that box underneath that shelf, and the Sefer Torah is on top of the shelf, which is on top of the box. But there was always a space there for the Sefer Torah.
Uh-huh.
Where's the coin to the mayor? There didn't have to be a shelf. Okay, but a mayor Haim Etzad Oren Mayavidlei. Fine. What is it? We said Rabbi Yehuda explains. He says because the pasuk says that the Sefer Torah has to be Mitzad Aron B'ris Hashem, he understands Mitzad to mean on the side, meaning on the outside of it, next to it.
Next to it.
Well, what does a mayor do with that? The answer is Hahumi Boiler Demakach Mitzad. Fine, but Rameyer would say, mitzadeva, that doesn't mean next to. It means on the side. Rameyer would just say, the point that the Torah wants to tell you is, don't think you had Luach 1, Sefer Torah, Luach 2. No, the Sefer Torah is next to the Luchos, mitzad, on one side. Ula olam
begave.
You would think maybe, I don't know, you would think that maybe you should put it between the Luchos. Ula olam begave minatzad, but still Rameyer would say that mitzad can still mean it's on the side, next to the Luchos, but still within it, rather than next to it, like Rabbi Yehuda would say. Rabbi Meir, next, let's ask.
I mean, it's more logical to say it this way than say mitzad means outside.
According to Rabbi Yehuda, that's what it means, though. Okay. Rabbi Meir, amudim hechahavakaimer. Next, we have to ask, according to Rabbi Meir, where were these silver pillars, the silver sticks that we talked about before? Mm-hmm. He also knows the pasuk in Shir Hashirim, amudim also kesef. So he has to assume that there were the sticks there also. Where did they place them? The answer is mibaroi. He would say they were on the outside. Again, according to, if we say like Rashi, that the sticks were supposed to be laid along the length of the luchos, then according to him, you have on the outside of the aron, you had stick one and stick two. According to the Ritva's idea that they were used to hold up the kaporis, they would be standing right outside the aron and holding up the kaporis from the outside, as opposed to from the inside, like Rabbi Yehuda would say. What about, according to the mayor, Rabbi Yehuda said that he's darshaning the pasuk in ba'orin rach to teach us that not only the whole lochos are in the orin, but also the broken lochos, also the first lochos. According to the mayor, where does he learn that from? Since he's using the limud in ba'orin rach to teach us about the sefer Torah, how does he know where the shivir lochos were placed? The answer is nafkulamid Rav Huna. He would learn it from what Rav Huna says. Incidentally, by the way, Tosfos discusses in Eruvin that originally Tosfos says over there was like this. The pasuk tells us that after that when the Eruvin tells Moshe in Parshas Ekev to go carve out two new luchos and come up, so Moshe says, I made over there a wooden aron and placed the luchos in it. So what happened? Tosfos explains like this. From then on, there were two aronis. There was the wooden one that Moshe made, and then there was the wooden one covered with gold that Bezalel made. They put the broken luchos in the wooden one. They put the whole luchos in the golden one. It remained the wooden one from then on was used. They would take whenever they went to war. They would take the wooden one with the broken luchos in it.
They went to war with the broken luchos.
They would go to the war. They take the broken luchos along because they're not going to take the whole luchos. They'll just stay in the Mishkan. But the broken luchos they would take with them to war. The one time they didn't, the one time they took the whole luchos was with the war against the Plishtim, at which the Plishtim captured the Aron. That was the real Aron, with the whole luchos and all. Actually, they eventually gave it back. Actually, Rashi brings over there on the pasuk in Shmuel, based on a medrash, that Shaul managed to grab the luchos away from them and get those to safety.
Which luchos?
The whole luchos, the second luchos that were in the golden Aron. He managed to snatch those away. So they took the empty aron and I guess the Torah,
right.
Well, they originally took the luchos, but Shaul was able to grab that from them. Anyway, the point is, eventually, once they built the Beis Hamikdash, then they put the broken luchos and the whole luchos into the golden aron and stopped using the wooden aron anymore, because from then on, the aron is not going to be traveling anyplace.
Okay. They gave back the Sefer Torah?
The Plishtim? I'm sure they did, yeah. So, but Rameyer shivir luchos to munachin ba'orin minolei. So where does Rameyer know that the broken luchos are in the aron? Given that he's using Ein Ba'orin Rak, or a different drasha about the Sefer Torah, the answer is Naskalamid Rav Huna. He learns it from what Rav Huna says. The Amr Rav Huna, my dichtiv, what does it mean when David, the first time David tried to bring the Oren to Yerushalayim, it's in the Torah of Parshas Shmini. So after the Plishtim sent it back, it was in Kiryas Yerushalayim for many years, and now David finally decided it's time to bring it to Yerushalayim.
Why?
Because why should it be in some suburb in a city of Kiryas Yearim?
Well,
it should be.
He should have done it a long time before.
He waited until he was king and until he's in Yerushalayim.
So immediately after
he became king of all 12 Shvatim, we are now his capital, and he captured Yerushalayim and made it his capital. That was the next thing he did. So the pasuk describes the Arim there. Ashenikra Shem, that the name is called on it. Shem Hashem Tzvakas Yoshev HaKruvim, the name of Hashem Tzvakas who dwells on top of the Kruvim. Olav is called on this Arim. Now, why the double expression Shem? Malamet Shluchas Veshiver Luchas Menachem Ba'Arim. The double word Shem there in the pasuk means that the whole Luchas as well as the broken Luchas are in the Arim. Good, so Rameyer learns it from that. Okay, the question is because of twice the word Shem. Question is Ve'idach. What would Rabbi Yehuda do with that pasuk? He would answer, he would say, you need that pasuk for a different drasha that Rabbi Yochanan said.
The Amr of Yechanan, Amr of Shimon Yechai. Malamed, this double expression, shame, teaches us shame b'chol kinuyim munachin ba'arei. That the name of Hashem and all of the kinuyim, all the various names of Hashem are all placed in the arei.
Why do you need it twice?
No, the shame. In other words, that all the different names of Hashem, not just the name Yud Kei Vav Kei. So actually, okay. So Maharsha explains all. It doesn't mean they had like a separate piece of paper or something in there with all the names written on it. It just means there were the luchos in there which have names of Hashem, the name Hashem and the name of the king. Most other Mefarshim learn that it means literally they had an actual piece of parchment in there that had the names of Hashem and all the kinuyim of Hashem and whatever written on it. The Idach Nami, fine. What would Rameyer say to that? Doesn't he need to learn that also? He also agrees that the shame b'chol kinuyim are in there. The answer is Enoch Nami, true. Okay, so he can't use the pasuk Ashenikra shame to teach us that. El Shivri Luchos de Munachan ba'arim Minalai. So where does he learn that the Shivri Luchos were in the Arin? Nafkalim with the Tani Rav Yosef. He would learn it rather from what Rav Yosef learns. The Tani Rav Yosef. When the Eivishta says to Moshe that you should take the broken luchos and asher shibauta, which you broke, the samtam, and place them, melamed shaluchos, v'shivir luchos, menachon ba'arin, that teaches us that the whole luchos, as well as the broken one, in other words, we do a hekesh from the fact that it says asher shibauta, the samtam, the ones that you broke, should be placed. So that also teaches us that they were in the arin. The idach, what would Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? He would answer, ha'um ba'ala l'chidrish lakish. He would say that you need the word asher shibauta to teach us what Rish Lakish said. Gamar Rish Lakish, what does it mean, Asher Shibauta? Famous thing. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch L'Moshe Yishar Kochach Asher Shibauta. The Ibishter is saying to Moshe, thank you, I appreciate it that you broke the Luchos, because by that you saved the Jewish people. So therefore, Asher Shibauta, we need it for that. We can't use it to learn from that because that the Shivri Luchos are in the art.
To thank the people.
To thank Moshe for taking the initiative. The Gemara tells us in Shabbos, this is one of three times when Moshe took the initiative and Hashem agreed with him. This is one of them, that he figured, as the Gemara says, he figured over there, if the Jewish people have the Torah, he made a kavachomer that Madach, a Yid who worships Avodah Zarah is not allowed to participate in the Korban Pesach, which is only one mitzvah, how much more so now where they're worshiping Avodah Zarah, they shouldn't have the Torah at all. But it also, it was a defense of the Jewish people, the Medrash explains, because it amounted to saying they haven't yet received the Torah, therefore they're not as guilty. And the Eibishter appreciated that he saved the Jewish people with that.
He broke the...
By breaking the luchos amounted to saying, look, they haven't received the Torah yet, therefore you can't really hold them responsible for what they did.
Tearing up the marriage.
Tearing up the silver in order to save the woman. Yeah, the famous marshal in the Medrash, yeah. Yeah. So the Eibishter shows his appreciation for that by saying, Yishar Kochach Asher Shibauta. Okay, Rav Meir would answer that there's two psukim that it says Asher Shibauta. Okay. Fine. So then the bottom line is we have the two different opinions. We have Rav Meir's opinion and we have Rabbi Huda's opinion about where the Sefer Torah was placed and about the various other details of what was in and around the Ark. Okay. Now we're going to get back to the topic of writing books of Tanakh, which is what we started with. We started by that, again, by way of our mission, which mentioned dividing up such Sfarim. We digressed to talk about the dinim of writing books of Tanakh and therefore writing a Sefer Torah. Now getting back to books of Tanakh. Turn it up on. Sidran Shal Nevi'im, the order of Nevi'im is as follows. Now remember, we had a three-way machlokas yesterday. Can you write all the Nevi'im in one volume? We had Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda saying that yes, and we had the Chachamim saying that no. Rav Meir saying you can write the entire Tanakh in one big scroll. Rav Yehuda saying that you have to write that you can write Nevi'im all in one scroll. So therefore, according to either of them, it becomes relevant to know what the proper order of the Nevi'im is. The order is like this. Yeshua v'shoftim Shmuel v'malachim Yirmiyah v'yechezkel Yeshaya u'shnei malchim. We have, by the way, nowadays, in any printed Tanakh, you'll have the Shmuel Aleph and Shmuel Beis and Malachim Aleph and Malachim Beis. That was done by the Goyim. The original thing is Shmuel is one big sefer and Malachim is one big sefer. Same thing with Yirmiyahu Yomim, same thing with Ezra and Nehemiah.
Why
this order? Basically, it's chronological, with exceptions that the Gemara is going to tell us. Yeshua is first, after they came in here to Israel. Shoftim is the 300-odd years after Yeshua. Shmuel is the period of is the time of Shmuel and of David and of Shaul and David.
Right.
Malachim is the kings after that, beginning from the end of David's life and going until the Churban. Yumiya, Yechezkel, Yeshaya, and Shnei Malchim, the Gemara is going to say in a minute, are not chronological, but we're going to say in a second why they're in the order that they are.
When did they arrive?
These Nevi'im?
Yeah.
During the time of the first Beis Mikdash, mostly. And
way afterwards.
Way after what? They're, most of them are during the period covered by Sefer Malachim. Mechti Hoshea Kadim. Now let's consider. Hoshea, which is the first one of the Treyasser, started his Nevuah before Yeshaya.
Dichtiv, Tchilas Dibra Hashem Boshem. Like this. The Pasuk says, the beginning of Hashem speaking with Hosea. Now, if you learn on simple pshat, it would mean the first thing that Hashem said to Hosea was such and such. The Pasuk doesn't need to tell us that. Obviously, you would assume the beginning of his sefer is the first thing Hashem told him. Why does it need to say that? So we understand it to say, Tchilas Dibra Hashem Hosea. The first speaking of Hashem was with Hosea. Meaning like Hosea is the first number. The question is, what do we mean? What do you mean? The Eibishter first speaks to Hosea. There were many Nevi'im from Moshe. Hosea lived in the middle of the first Beis HaMikdash, like 800 years after, 700 years after Moshe. So what's this Tchilas Dibra Hashem Boshea? The Amr of Yechanan. So Rabbi Yechanan says, no, what it means is, Shehoya Tchila La'arba Nevi'im Shenis Nabu Ba'oitz HaPerek. It means that Hosea was the first of four Nevi'im who were all contemporaries, who all prophesied during the same period.
And from that group,
he's the first one. The Elohein Hosea V'Yeshaya Amos Amicha. Hosea, Yeshaya, and Amos all have in the heading of in the first pasuk of their respective nevuahs. It says that they gave nevuah in the times of Uzziah, Yosam, Ahaz, and Chizkiah, four consecutive kings of Yehuda.
Uzziah,
Yosam, Ahaz, and Chizkiah. Micha doesn't mention Uzziah. It only mentions Yosam, Ahaz, and Chizkiah. So he's the youngest of the group. But it's in that order. So the question is, so why are we putting Hosea after Yeshaya, after Yirmiyah, Yechezkel, and Yeshaya, instead of putting him before Yeshaya?
If he's first.
No, because Hosea's Nevuah is written in the same Sefer, in the Sefer of Tzrei Aser, together with Chagas, Chayu, and Malachi, the last of the three Tzrei Aser, the last of the Tereel. So the Chagas, Chayu, Malachi, Sof, Nevi'im, Havu, and they were the last of the Nevi'im at the beginning of the second Mishmash. Therefore, Choshev, Lehu, Ba'adayah, so therefore Hosea goes with them at the end. Chronologically, they were the last Nevi'im, therefore Hosea, whose Sefer is part of, is goes together with theirs, as part of Tereel, so it all goes together. The question is, so why is Hosea part of Tereya? So why is it in a separate sefer of its own? And then it can be first. Then we can have it before Yeshaya chronologically, as it should be, instead of making it part of Tereya. So, and then you're saying it has to be stuck at the end because the last of the Tereya are chronologically the last of the Nevi'im.
It should have been
a separate sefer of Hosea,
right.
And then after that Yeshaya and then Yirmiyah, Yechezkel, Yeshaya, whatever, The answer is Aydi Dezuter Mirkas. Yes, but the problem is that Hosea's sefer is fairly short; it's only a couple hundred circuits, so it might easily be lost. So like this, So therefore, instead, what the Anshik Nesak Dola did, we're going to learn tomorrow that Anshik Nesak Dola are the ones who edited Tirei Aser into the form that we have it now. What they did is, therefore, they made it one big sefer of Tirei Aser, of all these 12 Nevuahs from short Nevi'im. So this way, it comes out to 1,000 Pesukim or so altogether between the 12 of them, and that way it won't get lost. But therefore, so since Hosea had to be with those later Nevi'im, because they're all short Nevuahs, therefore it gets placed last because the last one... He gave Nevuah. He prophesied about the kingdom of the Aseret HaShavatim, about what's going to happen to them if they don't do Tshuva, and about the kingdom of Yehuda, what's going to happen to them. And he finishes off with Tshuva Yisrael, which we learn on Shabbos Tshuva. There's a lot packed into his sefer, but it's only a couple hundred psukim. Mefarshim asked an interesting question in that case. Why don't we say the same thing with the Megillus? The Megillus are all short. The longest of them is Kehelos, is also only a couple hundred psukim. No, Rus is only 85 psukim. There's a couple of different answers. One of them is that the Tirei Aser is basically all the same theme. It's all Nevuahs.
Right.
Whereas the Megillus are all different kinds of themes. You have, for example, Shir HaShirim and Eicha, let's say, are almost polar opposites. It wouldn't really make sense to put them all in one book. There's that. Another answer that's given is because all of them are read from in public. Min Chabad is we don't read publicly from Rus and Shir HaShirim and Tehelos, but the Velt they do on Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot respectively.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's Megillus Esther on Purim and then Megillus Eicha on Tisha B'Av. So therefore, there's less likely that they're going to get lost because they're well known, as opposed to the Tirei Aser, not necessarily. I mean, except that we use them for Haftaras, there's no specific time when we learn from them. So therefore, we have to have them all as one big book. Next. Nechti Yeshaya Kodemiyim. Let's consider now, among the three bigger Nevi'im, we said Yirmiyah, Yechezkel, Yeshaya. By the way, in printed Tanakh, they don't always keep that order. Usually in printed Tanakh, they have them in chronological order. Yeshaya first, then Yirmiyah, then Yechezkel. and then Shreyasa. But our Gemara is saying the proper order is supposed to be first Yirmiya, then Yeshaya, then Yechezkel, then Yeshaya. So that's the question. Mechti Yeshaya Kadam Yirmiya. Let's consider Yeshaya came 100 years before Yirmiya, Yechezkel, and before Yechezkel. Yeshaya is in the times of Chizkiyahu. Yirmiya is beginning in the times of Yoshiyahu, who was Chizkiyahu's great grandson. Yechezkel was even later in the times of Chizkiyahu, the last king. Shouldn't it be in that order? Shouldn't Yeshaya be first? The answer is no. We don't do it chronologically. We do it according to themes. Because Malachim, the end of it talks about the Churban, about the Golos and whatever. That's the Malachim ends with that. The Yirmiya Kulei Churbana, most of Sefer Yirmiya talks about the Churban. Most of it is Nevuah that if you don't do Tshuva, there's going to be disaster. The Yechezkel Reshei Churban of a Sefer Nechemta. Yechezkel begins with Nevuah of Churban, and the first half of it, and then the last half of it is Nevuah of Nechama. The Yeshaya Kulei Nechemta, and Yeshaya is mostly Nevuah of Nechama. I mean, there's harsh ones in there also, like Chazon Nevadia, but Chazon Yeshayo, for example, that we learn on Shabbos Chazon, but most of it is Nechama. Therefore, we do it thematically, Samchin and Churbana, the Churbana, the Nechemta, the Nechemta. Therefore, we want to put Churban together with Churban. So, therefore, we go from the Churban of Malachim to the Churban of Yirmiya, then to the Churban in the first half of Yechezkel, then to put all the Churbanas together. Then Yechezkel transitions in the second half of the Sefer to Nevuah of Nechama, and then Yeshaya, which is all Nechama. And then we finish with Shreyasa just chronologically because they were the last of the Nevi. So, therefore, it goes by feet.
Whereas the other ones,
so we said, Yoshua, Shoftim, Shmuel, Malachim are strictly chronological. Treyasa, we're saying, because the last three of the Treyasa, Chagas, Chayim, Malachi, were the very last of the Nevi'im, therefore we put them last. The three bigger Nevi'im, Yumi, the ones who have more Nevuos, Yumi, Yechezkel, and Yeshaya, we put them in that order in order to put the themes in that order. Again, in your typical printed Tanakh, you won't find it that way. Your typical printed Tanakh, it's strictly chronological. So after Malachim, you have Yeshaya, Yumi, Yechezkel, and Treyasa. And we'll learn tomorrow, then we'll continue with the order of Ksuvim and then get into an interesting discussion eventually. We're going to talk about afterwards who wrote each of these Svarim and then eventually get into an interesting discussion that's going to consume most of the rest of the parak, all about Iyos.
Very nice.
Yeah.